Well, good midday. This is a nice Sunday here in Finland, and the sun is shining, and we're continuing with Letters on Occult Meditation video commentary program 12, and we're on page 41. I spent some time trying to straighten out the whole outline situation here on this version that I am using. One of the things we did notice was, that the middle period between termini, let us say, of an equinoctial age, the beginning and end, is a period of relative calm. But the termini are disruptive. And we're in such a terminus right now with a lesser age of Pisces ending and a greater age of Aquarius. Well, another equinoctial age of Aquarius beginning in about 100 years. And even a greater age of Aquarius beginning in the near future at a time when we cannot assess, we're not given the method of assessment. But okay, it is in process. Okay, I'm just trying to, make this all a little bit brighter. So, what comes next? In this program 12, after the idea of the middle part of a cycle where the incoming vibration is stabilized and the old has passed away, manifests in a period of calm and apparent equilibrium. I guess DK is talking about what goes on behind the scenes that we don't see. Dynamic equilibria are different than apparent equilibria. So behind the scenes, I'm sure there are many adjustments which give us the impression of equilibrium. So he goes on to say, at no time in the history of the race has this been better shown than in the present half century? I assume this means disruption, perhaps. The present half century, because he's writing this, after the Great War concluded after 1945. The sixth ray of devotion passes away, and the ray of ceremonial law enters, and with that entering comes a swinging into prominence of the outstanding features and faculties of the Department of Force and Activity, the synthesis, forget not, of the four minor rays. Well, this is the turbulence we are even now experiencing. And he calls it by an interesting name, the seventh ray, the ray of ceremonial law, sometimes called the ray of order or the ray of ceremonial magic. So the sixth ray is passing out. And the outstanding features of the ray of ceremonial law are more and more visible. Therefore, when things begin to fade away, you have an emphasis upon them because of the anxiety which the adherents begin to feel. their way of life is passing away. True religion is waning. Church attendance is off. People aren't interested anymore. And since the adherents, those who strenuously adhere to the old way, don't know anything about the cycles, they figure that the methods of their old ideals are to last forever. And of course they don't. And it happens over and over again that adherents cling fast to what they think should last forever, but it doesn't. And maybe because the sixth ray is especially a clinging ray, it's even more pronounced now. Maybe at the end of a first ray cycle, there's a greater, quicker letting go because of the possibility of abstraction. Okay. Therefore, you have the fighting for ideals and the devoted adherence to a cause, as demonstrated under the ray of the Master Jesus. He is the Chohan of the sixth ray ashram. And therefore, the clashing in every field of endeavor of the idealists, right or wrong, and their bitter warfare. This is occurring now, especially in the United States with its sixth ray Gemini personality, but in other places too. The conservatives, or even let's call them the radicals, the radical adherents to the old, are fighting with their last gasp to preserve that which is old and outworn, and the forces of obstruction feed that tendency. And rationality goes out the window. What was the World War but the culmination of two opposing ideals, fighting it out on the physical plane? It was an instance of the force of the sixth ray. It's really not over yet, though hopefully can be fought, as it will be fought. The inner planes. Now will come, as the sixth ray passes out, a gradual cessation of the clashing and the gradual domination of organization, rule, and order under the sway of the incoming force, that of the ray of the Master R. So, the question is, what really is the ray of the Master R? This was written in the early 20s, and the transfer of the ashrams to the Buddhic plane, of many of them at least, had not yet occurred, and presumably Master R was not yet the Mahachohan, as he is now. His real ray is the third, as he is the head of the entire, now at least, third department of hierarchy. The Master R, not yet the Mahachohan, when this was written. Though no doubt, as hierarchy plans so far ahead, the plan was in the works. Out of the present turbulence, will arise the ordered and organized form of the new world. Gradually, the new rhythm will impose itself on the disorganized communities of men, and instead of social chaos as now, you will have social order and rule. And instead of religious differences and the differentiated sects of so many so-called religions, apparently not really fulfilling the task that religion must fulfill, you will have religious expression itself regulated into form, you know, such as the full moon and new moon opportunities, and all ordered by law. Instead of economic and, well, let's, in the closest thing that I have to the violet, let's get that in. It's really fuchsia, it's not quite violet. Somewhere between the sixth and seventh ray, appropriately somewhere between the rose color and the purple. Instead of economic and political strain and stress, and oh my, is it stressed at the present time, will be seen the harmonious, ray four, seventh ray also, working of the system under certain fundamental forms, and all will be dominated by ceremonial, with the inner results aimed at by the hierarchy gradually taking shape. We'll continue with this color. I need a good purple highlighter, which I can't seem to make happen. Forget not that in the apotheosis of law and order and their resultant forms and limitations lies towards the close, I choose my words with deliberation, a fresh period of chaos and the escape of the imprisoned life from even those limitations, bearing with it the imparted faculty and the essence of the development aimed at by the logos of the seventh ray. It's a systemic energy in a way, having to do with sacrifice and death. Well, later we will also outgrow the seventh ray, and a new ray will accompany the age of Capricorn. And we do not know which ray it will be, because the cycles which accompany the equinoctial astrological ages are independent of the rays of the age itself. I mean, you can have, for instance, and has been before, a 2,000, well, let's call it a 2,500 year period, or really 2,160, probably closer. You can have an Aquarian first ray age, Aquarian second ray age, Aquarian third ray age, fourth ray, fifth ray, sixth ray. And it seems now that we are going to have an Aquarian seventh ray age. As I say, the cycle is somewhat independent of the astrological rulership of the equinoctial age. And we really don't know the order of those cycles. Maybe it takes place in perfect order, 1 through 7. Maybe not. Such is the situation from time to time through the ages. Each ray sweeps into power bearing its own incarnating spirits. And we have to ask, are these monads or souls or both? To whom the period marks a point of least resistance comparatively. I'm remembering DK saying in The Destiny of the Nations, it's only sixth ray monads who will have difficulty with the impending rulership of the Age of Aquarius by the seventh ray. The others will find a way to get along and work together more productively. So each ray sweeps in, you know, and when it uses the word spirits, you do have to ask the monadic question. Sometimes we just use the same term for different items, and we have to determine by context and by what we've read about and thought about before the particular meaning of the word. So seventh ray souls anyway, and I suppose seventh ray monads will find less resistance in the incoming seventh ray age, which will see the activation of the seventh ray lord in Shambhala. The seventh ray lord is activated, and souls, and let's say both souls and monads on the seventh ray will find easy resonance with that that ray. I guess the second ray can find some kind of resonance with almost any other ray, it being so inclusive, but there is a little difficulty. He has warned us about the second ray and third ray together, which, as wouldn't you know it, is the soul and personality ray, or are the soul and personality rays of our planetary logos. Anyway, these spirits, they contact six other types of force in the worlds. And notice, not just in the world, but war roads, having to do with various planes, and six other groups of beings who must be impressed by that force and carry forward in its sweep towards the universal goal. And we've just been dealing with the groupings of beings, you know, 7 times 7, 7 times 6, 7 times 5, 7 times 4, etc., and found on different levels where different points of tension prevail, ever intensifying as we rise. In other words, the point of tension that it takes, let's say, to deal with the first subplane of the atmic plane is a more intense point of tension than it takes to deal with, let's say, the third subplane of the mental plane. So six other groups of beings who must be impressed by that force. And these groupings can be higher mental, triadal, or even monadic. as we've seen from page 38 and 39, a tabulation that we want to be cognizant of because it kind of gives us our own, or hints at our own higher spiritual families. We know our outer family and we consider it to be our family, but we give less attention to the progressively more inward families. We don't really even know that they exist. We sometimes say, oh yes, well, I have real rapport with X, Y, or Z on the emotional plane, or with X, Y, or Z, I share real mental rapport, or I believe and see and have faith as X, Y, and Z have. That's a hint at our inner families. As far as what's going on Buddhically, with 28 groups and 21 groups, maybe we don't know so much because we have not raised our consciousness with any consistency even to the middle point of the Buddhic plane, let alone the atomic sphere of the Buddhic plane, the first subplane. And as far as the first subplane of the atmic plane goes, well, we're lucky if we catch some impression of what spiritual will can mean to us without knowing anything about the fullness of real spiritual will as it comes from the atmic plane. But I guess maybe many of us know what it is to be driven by a great purpose, which is impersonal. And it's beyond any possible personal gain. There may be such gain, but the motive is not that. So these spirits, they, spirits, contact six other types of force in the worlds and six other groups of beings are impressed by that force. And these groups of beings can be on various planes. Let's see, groupings on various subplanes. Let's call them subplanes. Such is also the specific situation in the period in which you live, a period wherein the seventh logos, now yet another name here, of seven, ceremonial law and order. Seeks to straighten out the temporary chaos, you know, and make sure that there are no crinkles in the potential alignment that will stop it. You've all seen when you have a straw, you can't bend it too much, otherwise it will crimp and you won't get anything through it. And when it's straightened out and you kind of make the fold a little more tubular, once again, you do get the liquid through it. So the period in which we live, and you know, as I say, this was written 100 years ago, seeks to straighten out the temporary chaos and aims at the reduction within limits of the life, escaping from the old and worn out forms. Because, you know, always there will be a sense, an attitude, what can we call it, that the spirit has, that the form is inadequate. The spirit is all, the spirit is being, the spirit is unchangeable. and can only tolerate confinement of specific times long enough to bring about the divine plan through the Mahamaya. The new forms are needed now and will be adequate. It is only after the middle period in a new cycle that limitation will again be felt and attempt to escape be started anew, and obviously this is not yet upon us. In fact, we have not really entered fully into the age of Aquarius. So the situation, even right now, is dealing with a terminus and also a beginning. And chaos is the result. You know, it works itself out in many spheres of activity. And maybe the most impressive are political, economic, and religious areas. In a way, science is science, but how it's used, of course, is determined by the ray. And new sciences are coming with the seventh ray. Obviously, there's some kind of crudeness connected with the sixth ray, as Mars is one of the rulers, and Mars rules the crudeness of the concrete mind. Art is art, we might say. You know, it will be expressing in various ways according to the rays. And there will be, you know, a great renaissance, a rebirth. You can't have it under the sixth ray. The great cathedrals and the great works of Renaissance art are still with us, but Master DK promises us something far beyond those heights. And wisdom is wisdom and embraces all these possibilities. The political arena is filled with first, sixth, and seventh ray types. He tells us those are mainly the political workers. And you know, the trouble today is in the social adjustment required in a new politics. The scientific attitude required in a new religion, and the distributive approach required in a new economic attitude that we call sharing, and without which, up to a certain measure, the Christ cannot reappear. He doesn't dare reappear when there is hoarding of the resources of the earth, and when the peace that could be solved, let's say, through the first and fourth rays, is not yet with us. And when there's just so much obstruction and filth, especially in the political and religious arena, but there we can see the things swept under the rug are reappearing, and we see them. Therefore, this is all about how to assign meditation, right? And it gives you an idea, gives you a certain humility that helps you refrain from overconfidence in this matter. The hubris of being a teacher who can just say, well, meditate on this. I think you can think about any term or quality. I think that's permissible, but it's in the flow of the new types of meditation that things will really be accomplished to bring progression forward in terms of the divine plan. Therefore, the wise teacher at this time considers the situation and weighs the effect of the incoming ray on the spirits in incarnation. Here, therefore, you have a third ray and its bearing to be considered in the assignment of meditation. So, you know, what do we have? We have the ray of the ego, ray of the personality, and the ray of the times. And surely, those of us who have lived long enough begin perhaps to feel the difference between the way the sixth ray affected us earlier in life and the way the growing strength of the seventh ray is affecting us. Complex, you feel the task to be? Yes. Fortunately, the Hall of Wisdom equips its graduates for the task. And we enter that hall. Well, I have a code, but I've forgotten it. We enter that hall at the first initiation. It's so good to be reading this again, you know, with almost word for word attention that commentaries require. At this particular period, the aspect of the form in meditation, whether meditation based principally on the egoic ray or on the personality ray, will be much developed. So what do we call it, you know, like meditation with seed, not without. You can, okay, well, that's basically the difference, and we notice these different kinds of forms in meditation. DK has given us quite a few, you know, and probably he was instrumental also in saying, well, maybe this meditation should not be offered to the general public, even though maybe some of his students to whom such meditations were assigned were less wise than he and were willing to see those meditations go out. I think one has to be very careful about releasing meditations specifically attuned to specific individual needs, releasing such out to the public, because a lot of damage can be done through over-enthusiasm and burning and inflammation and tearing, you know, those things can occur. You can look to see very definite forms built up and assigned both to individuals and to groups, resulting in an increase of white magic and the consequent resultant on the physical plane of law and order. There will be such meditations, maybe without announcing them as such. DK has given some. He certainly left us with some group meditations that we can all all practice with profit. As he says, that ought to hold you for the rest of this incarnation. The coming period of reconstruction, remember Gemini, the forces of reconstruction, goes forward in line with the ray. and its ultimate success and achievement is more nearly possible than perhaps is looked for. You know, the great Lord of Love, I think in 1943, experienced or took yet another aspect of the lengthy seventh initiation process. And naturally, by numerical resonance, that initiation and that ray would be linked, even though that seventh initiation is mainly a second ray initiation. But the great Lord comes in under the law, and naught can stop his approach. Yet, you know, he determines when the time is right. He could not enter without certain fulfillments, which perhaps only he and his closest can see. So there's a certain inevitability here, because he has chosen thus to appear. And I always have the sense that in the Garden of Gethsemane, when he was acquiescing to the will of God and passing through a major part of the sixth initiation, that he saw what would happen to humanity and the planet if he did not reappear and be an agent of that divine will which was revealed to him in the garden. Just now, the great need of the time is for those who understand the law and can work with it. Well, even the regularity of our full moon and new moon meditations give us some practice along that line. Now is the opportunity, too, for the development of that principle and the training of people in the helping of the world. And whenever we're using a word like training, through regularized repetition of the right kind, it implies the use of the seventh ray. As I look back upon my own life, I realize, I was a pretty good pianist at one point, but I realized that it was the lack of seventh ray in my nature, in the present incarnation, which prevented me from really practicing in the right way and being a really good pianist. Training is needed. Virgo, seventh ray, these are the things that help people achieve a very good foundation of reliable spiritual habits. So we can pause, we can say, do I, any one of us, understand the law, and can I work with it? Do I understand the law, and can I work with it? Well, obviously, we don't understand all the laws, but something. We can get, of course, in the beginning, overly rigid about the laws that we sense, and our rigid approach can be an obstacle in itself, but later it all takes the place, or takes place as the correct way to live. There are just some things we must do and will do, and some things we must not do and will not do. And this applies to how we feel and how we think as well. The minor rays of harmony and science, rays 4 and 5, respectively, respond quickly to this seventh influence. I wonder if this particular paragraph is not also found in the Destiny of the Nations. Looks awfully familiar. Respond quickly to this influence. By that statement, I mean that their monads are easily influenced in that direction, it seems. Here that we are confirming the existence of fourth and fifth ray monads. Even as we do for fifth ray monads in relation to the path of magnetic work. Yeah, it talks about fifth ray people, i.e. those whose monads are on the fifth ray. But I think we've solved that there are seven monadic divisions on the monadic plane, but on the logoic plane, in terms of the major ray of the monads, there are only three divisions. And what those three may be, I think, is a very big stretch for us to try to understand in our own individual cases until we understand which one of the seven on the monadic plane may be ours. The monads of the sixth ray of devotion find conformity, I suppose, to the seventh ray cycle more difficult until nearing the point of synthesis, but at least there's something there which promises a better future. You know, even at length, when you read the Law of Repulse for the sixth ray, you know, being an old veteran on the Martian sixth ray, you see that it has a tough time seeing and conforming to the expectations of others and to the expectations of the other rays. The monads on the first and second rays find in this ray a field of expression. 2 and 7 bringing healing, 1 and 7 bringing great, far-reaching organization, lawful organization. And first ray monads have a direct link with this ray and seek to wield the law through power, while second ray monads, being the synthetic type, guide and rule, follow rules and induce others to follow rules through love. So first ray monads work with the seventh ray in the wielding of the law through power. Well, you know, you can just meditate on that for a moment. You know, you will conform to the law. You will conform to the will which lays out a certain structure. And then second ray monads, they use the law in a different way. And they have a loving persuasiveness in their use of the seventh ray. I do think that, I'm beginning to think that this particular section is found in the destiny of the nations also. So we see first ray monads, and of course seventh ray monads naturally have an easy way, but first and second ray monads have a particular facility here in working with the seventh ray, and four and five respond quickly. And I'm not sure if it said anything about ray three, but Master R is a case in point. He is a great third ray monad working with the seventh ray, and he brought, when he transferred into the Maha Chohanship, he brought, I think, his second and third degree initiates, many of them, with him onto the third ray. So they too had the combination of three and seven. I think I have today given you enough to engender thought on this fifth factor, the condition of the times, the ray of the times, the milieu into which the individual is born. Yes, the meditation has to take into consideration the egoic ray, very important, and the personality ray as a modification, but also this third ray consideration has to do with the relationship between the rays of the times and the rays of the individual. Between the rays of the times and the rays of the individual or groups of individuals, because they too have rays. And if DK is going to give group meditations, he has to know the sort of ray quality of the groups to which he is assigning such meditations. So this is all I seek to do, he says. To the guiding light of the intuition is the rest left. And what that inner guide reveals is of more value to the individual than aught exoterically imparted. Therefore, ponder and consider. The guiding light of the intuition, more important, he says, even than what he imparting, apparently exoterically as he sees it, even what he imparts, more important than what he imparts. Well, I think we have to learn how to use our intuition, which is on its way, and cultivation. Maybe we can do a little more here with some words of cheer, you know, because if the instruction becomes too burdensome, then it's difficult to emerge out from under it. And one feels then that it's all wonderful, but I just can't. It's too much for me. Obviously, Master DK doesn't want us to feel that way. He wants us to feel that all of this is within reason, doable. And that kind of attitude will make it a joy to do the Master's work. I sometimes think we ought to wake up every day and look ahead at the day and say, it is a joy to do your work. Say it and mean it and guide our activity and feeling and thought by the idea that it is a joy to do your work, a joy to do the Master's work. And in that kind of self-forgetfulness, many problems begin to disappear. It's possible, you know, if we keep our eyes too much upon ourselves, little selves, that gaze burdens us because we over exaggerate our limitations and we appear smaller and smaller and less capable. But if we really strip away and find our true identity, then we will realize that we are ever more capable than we imagine. That's the key. Bring our enthusiasm and our capability, our sensed capability to the great task. I was thinking, you know, sometimes that's how work songs originate. There's some wonderful work songs, you know, sea chanties and things of that nature, rather than just the tedium of the work done in quiet, the sound of the song makes light work. Many hands make light work, and the sound too. I'm thinking about the Song of the Volga Boatman, which, it's an impressive song from Russia. And I'm thinking about the sea shanty. It's called Holloway Joe, you know, and it's done with rhythm, you know, that, and the rhythm takes you, speaking of the seventh ray. There are many of these work songs. Maybe we could say Venus and Virgo would be an indicator. And they give the joyous element to the work to be carried on. I personally have been involved in some very tedious work. In the old days, maybe licking envelopes for 3 weeks. Or at least making sure envelope by envelope there was enough moisture. I found ways to use music inwardly to support that necessary work. So we can always have something that brings us closer to the joy which as disciples we are advised we must experience. So anyway, here, you know, still in 1920 and still in the sign Gemini, apparently, some words of cheer. It is only as the disciple is willing to relinquish all in the service of the Great One, the Christ, or the planetary logos, or God or being, you know, and to hold naught back, that liberation is achieved and the body of desire becomes transmuted into the body of higher intuition. And note that although the term transmute is often physically applied. It does apply to the physicality of the astral body, or even of the lower mental body. So, you know, we can't only say that transmutation is of the etheric physical plane, transformation of the astral plane, and transfiguration of the mental plane. There's transmutation does go all along the way, wherever there is matter that needs to be purified. But this is it. To those who give all is given. And we can announce that to ourselves and kind of believe it, but doing it is another matter. Holding nothing back. You know, I think that's embodied in the Christ statement that the greater love hath no man than that he lay down his life for a friend. I guess that's really holding nothing back, and it does bring us to the old story of Damon and Pythias and their interaction with a certain tyrant and the proof of their friendship, which turned that tyrant around because he had never seen anything like it. You can look it up, you know, the story, because it really shows two who would hold nothing back. So anyway, we do want to have a transmutation of the astral body into a body of the higher intuition. And maybe a transmutation of the etheric physical body into an instrument of the will. And certainly we're familiar with the idea that we transmute the lower mental body into the higher mental body, or at least it can be a mind held steady in the light of the higher mental body, whereon what we usually call the soul can be found. All of these changes in our usually opaque instrument, resistant instrument, have to take place, and it all happens through a kind of unselfish attitude, where we are no longer so self-concerned in the lower sense. We simply regard what we have as an instrument to be laid upon the altar in the service of the higher objectives. Some words of cheer. It is the serving perfectly each day with no thought or calculation about the future. You know, what will this net me? What will this gain me? How will it fulfill my ambitions? It is the serving perfectly each day that brings a man to the position of the perfect server, which is ruled by Aquarius, as we know. And may I suggest one thing? All care, well, of course he can suggest one thing, because he's been there and he knows. And we can attend, if we will, to the advice of one who has been through what we must pass through. It just makes sense to attend carefully. And may I suggest one thing? All care and anxiety is based primarily on selfish motive. Even, you know, our fears of death and you know, probably many of us have gone through in our mind the different modes of dying, none of them probably too pleasant. And he's saying that even such anticipations are based on selfish motive. And I suppose part of that is a clinging to the body. You fear further pain. You shrink from further sad experience. It is not thus that the goal is reached. It is reached by the path of renunciation. It may mean the renunciation of joy. Well, you know, maybe not, maybe something more like happiness. I guess from other things he said, the joy abides no matter whether happiness is fleeting or not. May I suggest one other thing? All care and anxiety is based primarily on selfish motive. That's something to really think about, because I suppose we all have our cares and anxieties. I guess you think of Master Jesus, or the initiate Jesus at the time, contemplating the very unpleasant prospect of death upon the cross. And you wonder, was he so in the grip of his duty that it negated the usual selfish concerns about pain, about living, about dying, you know? You fear further pain. You shrink from further sad experience. It is not thus that the goal is reached. It is reached by the path of renunciation. Perhaps it may mean the renunciation of joy, or let's call it happiness, or the renunciation of good reputation. You know, you do the right thing, people don't understand, and they speak ill of you and look down upon you through their shallow judgment. Or the renunciation of friends, because what bound you together was on the superficial side of things and not necessarily in-depth friendships. And the renunciation of all that the heart clings to. And he uses the word heart in an interesting way here, doesn't he? The renunciation of all that the heart clings to. We would normally think it's the solar plexus, but this is a poetic way of speaking and probably accurate in its own way too. It may mean this. And then he says, I say perhaps, I say not, it is so. I think much will depend on the karma. I but seek to point out to you that if that is the way you are to reach your goal, then for you it is the perfect way. Aught that brings you rapidly to their presence, capital P, capital P, and to their lotus feet is by you to be desired and eagerly welcomed. So he's saying, it's obvious what he's saying, do not become preoccupied with the pain and sadness and the unpleasantness of relinquishment of that which you have held firmly to yourself. Do not become preoccupied with those things, because that kind of preoccupation, that fear, that recoil, that refusal to go forward because of the pain, that will hold you back from the great release. I think maybe we have to talk to ourselves often about that. Because, you know, it is a problem. I mean, and this is why fear is considered to be the great dweller on the threshold for all of humanity on this planet. And, you know, as soon as the other kingdoms of nature can respond to the fear that is already in substance, it's an obstacle for them too. The animals display it, and maybe even in the recoil of plants, they display it as well. Some initial example of fear, you know, gravitating towards the sun, but recoiling from other environmental factors which are not attractive and are instead to them repellent. So VK cannot predict in every case that these particular things will be given up, but if they are, then they are. And what's right for you in the renunciation may not apply to someone else, but it applies to you. So just for a moment, trace renunciation in your life. Trace it and see how you fared with it, if it did happen. And maybe you'll find some kind of rheological or astrological backup to explain the dynamics of the renunciation you went through. I remember long ago I went through a process which really divided the sun sign from the rising sign. And although there was plenty of inclination to follow the direction of the sun sign, I chose correctly. Something, you know, inward compelled me to do that. And the further I go from that scene long, long ago, I really understand that it was the rising sign that prevailed. And again, not the personality ray, but the soul ray. A good choice can be determining for the entire life. A poor choice may set you back for lives. As DK once commented on one of his disciples, that the choices that this disciple had made would not be corrected for another three lives. I mean, it's amazing that a master can see that kind of thing. It would be another three lives. Well, maybe not all choices. You know, they come in under the planet of choice, Saturn, ruling Libra hierarchically, the sign of choice, and ruling, in a sense, in an exalted position, really such a ruler of Libra. Some will be good, some will not be so good. And we have to, in doing our life review, which is really an expansion of what we seek to do at the end of every day, it will be revealed which have been the determining choices and whether they have determined for good or for ill. Because interesting, according to our choices, the Saturn factor appears, we either gain time or lose time. A poor choice is a loss of time. And a waste of time, of one's own time, is like suicide, says Master Moria. And if you waste someone else's time, it's like you're committing murder. He's pretty drastic about these things. Two of the most drastic kinds of presentations of the wisdom we can find come in Agni Yoga and in the work of Master Hilarion, Light on the Path. Just a tiny book, but whoa, it just kind of burns in your hand, you know. So even a review on choice, even if it just takes a minute or two daily, we can question ourselves about the quality of the choices we have made during the day. So he goes on and he says, cultivate daily, therefore, the supreme desire that seeks solely the commendation of the inner guide, you know, the, sometimes we call it the inner monitor, the inner guide and teacher, and the egoic response to good action dispassionately performed. Because if we, if we excite ourselves in our passions, we only strengthen the distorting glamorous tendencies of the astral body. So cultivate, therefore, that which the inner guide, to which the inner guide can give assent and saying, good, you know, work well done. And we know when what we have done is approved and when what we have done leaves some unresolved condition of consciousness or conscience, which of course affects the consciousness too. The conscience is the guide. And, you know, this is that old Walt Disney story of Pinocchio, you know, the whole question of lying and truth and all that. And the little mentor, a bit like the cricket version of Yoda, sings a song about always let your conscience be your guide. Well, that's easier said than done. And to pause and to ask ourselves, what does my conscience say in this matter? May not be as regular a habit as should be the case. So he's advising us there. We don't need the commendation of the worldly wise when we have followed what makes sense in a worldly sense. We need the commendation of the inner knower. Should bereavement come your way, he says, smile through it all. It will end in a rich reward and the return of all that has been lost if we follow our conscience. Let me see, and then bereavement is the result. If we follow our, I don't know how to write conscience in a code. But it kind of looks like a con science, or with knowledge, or with soul knowledge. The con is the with, and the science is the knowledge. Should, now I think this would be good advice, wouldn't it, for those in the political field and also the religious field. I've known ministers who have spoken their mind from the pulpit, and the way things are now, of course, the congregation has all the power, and they fired the minister because they didn't like glamour of sentiment. They didn't like what he said, even though there was so much truth in it. I wonder what happened, you know, recently, maybe it's happened in a couple of places, a homeless man, very dirty and tattered, tried to come into a Sunday morning service. And the elders of the church, basically, you know, they held their noses and they threw him out. But he didn't quite go out. He turned on his heels and did an amazing thing. He walked up to the pulpit, because after all, they had been waiting for their minister to appear, and he wasn't to be found. And then when he took off his disguise, everybody gasped, because after all, it was their minister proving a point that, unlike the Christ, the congregation had not welcomed the poor, the afflicted, the downtrodden, the hungry, the desolate. And that, that was a lesson. That could be a life-changing lesson, as we can see. So, should scorn and despisings be your lot? Smile still. For only the look of commendation that comes from the master is the one to seek. Should lying tongues take action, fear not, but forge ahead. A lie is a thing of earth and can be left behind as a thing too vile to be touched. There's that old-fashioned word vile, you know, which means utterly evil and repulsive and disgusting. And we remember what Master Blavatsky, was I going to say? What Madame Blavatsky said about the Tibetan when she studied with him in Tibet, saying, I know a youth so pure that no lie would ever cross his lips. The single eye of, you know, purpose, the eye of Shiva, the blue eye, the synthetic eye, the unalloyed desire, not mixed motives, you know, pure motives, the consecrated purpose, not just thinking about it, but applying it, and the ear that turns in deafness to all earth's noise. Such is the aim of the disciple. Well, you know, the Tibetan knows how to inspire us, does he not? I say no more, but I desire that you do not dissipate needless force in vain imaginings and feverish speculations and troubled expectations. So he says, basically what he's saying here is eliminate fear and worry. And Leadbeater had a lot to say about that too. You know, he had the aura drawn as he saw it, and it just turned into a mass of gray jelly under the impulse of fear. And yet it is the great dweller on the threshold for the human race and even for other kingdoms of nature. So this is what the Tibetan expects of us. This is what he wants from us. And he's basically saying, you know, what is he saying? He's saying this, smile through it all because of your confidence in the inner God. This kind of confidence, not in outer things, the things that pass away, but a kind of confidence in that which never passes away, you know, your own true, incorruptible, unchanging nature, your own beingness, your own immortality, your own inextinguishability, ineradicability. That has always been and can never disappear. So this is the attitude to have as we are stepping on the thorns on that thorny path. It's a kind of an inevitability that we will be pricked by the sharp experiences of life. And through it all, we realize the incorruptibility of our true nature and its utter survival forever without beginning and without end. It defies our normal logic, but that's what we do realize. So I'm going to just take the slightest little break here. Then go on with the sixth of 6 points to consider when assigning meditation. There's a little bit here, or maybe more than a little. Yeah, it's actually a lot, taking us up to letter 4 and up to page 50. But okay. We have a few more pages, basically from 44 to 50. Let's see if we can do that. I'm not sure that we can, but let's see. Now, if we do go on, and I would kind of like to do that, we have the sixth point. Each point, of course, is subdivided into a number of points. And, you know, I hoped to list them in this document, which you are welcome to have. It's basically DK's writing with some comments by myself and some highlighting and so forth. So anyway, this is the groups, the inner and outer, with which the pupil is affiliated. He has to consider that. The point for consideration today is of practical interest. It deals with the factor of a man's groups. The relationship to a master we have somewhat considered, and I will therefore proceed with the instruction on group connection. You kind of wonder, how will this point relate to the assigning of meditation? We showed yesterday the importance of meditation in connection with the group to which a man is allied on egoic levels and other alliances too. Today we deal with the group to which he may be called on Earth. This group is not exactly a reflection of the group on egoic levels, as might be anticipated, for only certain units of an egoic group will be in incarnation at any one time. We deal with the law of cause and effect as demonstrated in the group's national religious and family. So there are many more members of inner groups, and they're not all in incarnation simultaneously. So the outer groups will not be an exact reflection. And I think I'll just make that a little bigger. We are affiliated, associated with a number of groups, outwardly perhaps, some of us. And maybe the ones that are most important, are the ones to which the master has to pay attention. I mean, if you're, for instance, affiliated with the Arcane School or some school of esotericism, Moria Federation, University of Seven Rays, Meditation Mount, School for Esoteric Studies, to name a few, that may make a difference in how he would assign the meditation. So now we are looking at four groups connected with the pupils. He does talk about national, religious, and family groups. Let's see what he is going to say here. A man, when in incarnation, has four sets of people to consider as his group, and we might say several groups, making it seems one group. Or we can say that each such group is his group, or each such group is really his group. Not that there's only one, but that he belongs to all distinctly, with some overlaps at some times, but maybe quite distinctly. Number one, the big national group to which he belongs, the karma of which, through aggregation of numbers, is so strong that he cannot break away from it, even if he will. Certain racial characteristics, certain temperamental tendencies are his because they are hidden in the racial spiritual body. Well, okay, what we have here is nation, and we have here race. Certain racial characteristics, certain temperamental tendencies are his because they are hidden in the racial physical body, and he must carry that constitution. You know, are you black, white, red, yellow, whatever? I remember from the Field Museum in Chicago, it's also called the Museum of Natural History. I used to love that particular museum. I had a friend, and he preferred the Museum of Science and Industry. I preferred the Museum of Natural History. And we were brought by our parents respectively to, we kind of alternated which we would go to. And there was a hall where all the different ethnic types were cast in bronze. Impressive statues. And, you know, far more numerous than just the so-called black, white, red, yellow. You know, in the old days, there were even blue men, we understand, and maybe some other colors which seemed odd to us now. But they're hidden in the racial physical body, and he must carry that constitution and the tendencies inherent in that particular type of body throughout his life on Earth. That body provides the needed lesson, or as evolution proceeds, it provides the best body for the type of work that has to be accomplished. An Oriental type of body has one set of qualifications, and you know, that's one of the problems, because sometimes the Oriental teacher comes to the West and does not take into consideration the difference in the Eastern and Western types of bodies. So an Oriental type of body has one set of qualifications, and an Occidental body has another set, and equally good, if I might so express it. I seek here to make this point clear, for the tendency of the Westerner is to ape the Oriental and to endeavor to force his vibrations to the same key as that of the Oriental. At times, this causes concern to the inner teachers and occasionally leads to trouble in the vehicles. Okay. So here are the national types, and you know, that can be quite different from the racial type, can it not? Especially in the big melting pots, you know, we have people of all different races. Let's say they're talking English in America. You don't necessarily hear the difference if it's a Native American talking or a Oriental talking, or a black person or a white person. A lot of it will depend on what state they grew up in, whether they're from the north or south or east or west. But their carrying of the civilization, of the national attitude, will not be dependent on their racial type. But then there are these racial characteristics, and you cannot, you know, change your race, though some people have tried to do so. They change their sex these days, as if it was their choice, and as if no supervision went into their being born a man or a woman, a male or a female. And some try to lighten their skin or darken their skin, as if that would somehow change their racial type. And I think it usually leads to a lot of trouble. Okay. There has been too much tendency to believe that to be an Oriental holds the goal for all. Forget not that even the great ones themselves are not all Orientals, and the masters in European bodies are of equal accomplishment to the better known Eastern adepts. Ponder on this. It needs much wise consideration. Hence my emphasis of the fact, when more is known along these lines, and when schools of meditation are founded and conducted on truly occult lines by graduated teachers, forms of meditation will be planned, suited to the nationality and to the temperamental differences existing between nations. But, you know, just as when he told his students their raise, he didn't begin with the entire Ray formula. He simply began with the soul and personality Ray, and then later on in the process revealed the lesser Rays. So in this case, we also have to begin with the generalities, the larger picture, and then get into the many specifics that differentiate different nationals, different cultures, different parts of countries, different hemispheres, and the particulars of certain races. So we'll begin with the generalities and not envy or ape or unwisely imitate those who we idealize as being more spiritual because their race is different. It's not wise to do that. I think, you know, we have the idea that occultism is moving from the East to the West. The East, with its fourth ray soul and third ray personality, is moving its occultism in great measure to the West, with its soul number two and personality number four. There is, of course, across the four, the numerical resonance. And so the seat of the newer and truer, maybe a more modern discipleship and occultism will first be found in the West now. And when more is known along these lines, and when schools of meditation are founded and conducted on truly occult lines, which is not yet the case, by graduated teachers, that means initiates of a certain standing, forms of meditation will be planned, suited to the nationality and to the temperamental differences existing among nations. This is going to take a lot of quite subtle knowledge and inner sight. You know, we have to be able to focus within the causal body and see, are there causal body differences between different nationals, different races? But then, of course, people have been in all kinds of races and nations. DK does, however, speak to some degree of stability regarding the tendency towards sameness over lives. And he says, most of my incarnations have been masculine and in an oriental body. And now, could that be a hint? I mean, you know, maybe DK is a moonchain monad, but still, he would have participated in certain of the Atlantean races because the moonchain types came in the third subrace of the fourth root race. They had been held, you know, maybe in some kind of pralaya before that point. And so, can those other races, the Toltec, the Atlantean, Semitic, a number of them, can they be called Oriental? I'd have to, you know, brush up on my study of what Theosophy says about the Atlantean sub-races of the main Atlantean root race. But anyway, he did say that. Most of my incarnations have been masculine and in an oriental body. So we need to try to figure out how that might be possible. At another point, he talked about those from the previous major solar system, and he seemed not to include himself, and maybe not Master Kuhumi either, though I have the sense that Master Moria, Master Jesus, Master Hilarion, that they were earlier solar system types because of all the Jewish karma that seemed to be involved. There's one other master about whom I feel that to be quite definitely the case. First Ray, well, maybe Master Jupiter, he's said to be the oldest of all the masters. Well, what really does that mean? Coming from an origin long past, and that he achieved his mastership long, long ago under different circumstances. Did I mention Master Jesus? I hope so. Because certainly as Joshua and Jeshua and Joshua the high priest and Jesus, as we call him, his karma was very much with the Jews. And even now he's in that part of the world, we're told, in a Syrian body. Well, okay, each nation has its virtues and each has its defects. It will therefore be the work of the superintending teacher, you know, providing kind of a higher will in the whole process of educating the student, to apportion meditations that will intensify the virtues and remedy the defects. The field opened up by these ideas is so vast that I cannot deal with it here. Well, let's just talk about that kind of education that it takes to, and sensitivity that it takes to see these things and really bring them into consideration. Specialists will later take up the problem, and the time comes when the Orient and the Occident will each have their own schools, subject to the same basic rules and under the superintendence of the same inner teachers, but wisely differing on certain points and, though aiming at the same goal, follow different routes. Well, already we know that for the fourth root race, there will be a Japanese preparatory school and a Western Chinese, probably that area that we call Tibet, a Western Chinese advanced school. Those are the two schools that I can think of specifically in the East, and maybe others will appear. There will be another Western school for the sixth root race. It doesn't seem to hint that it is Oriental. Also, the second and third sub races, they're not really from the Orient per se, they're from the Near East, will be taught by the Southern Indian School, and that is Asiatic, and there is a body type difference there. So when he uses a word like specialists, you can see with the kind of a vast knowledge required how important is this particular examination of the tendencies and qualities of each type of body. Because if we apply the same methods to all types of bodies, we will not advance the process as otherwise we could if we were more accurate in our examination and then our assigning of meditation. You know, that will come in the days when we are in that kind of fifth initiation or fifth degree position. You will later see these schools founded in each nation. That is so important. Not just the seven and seven, but each nation, I suppose, of any type of development in its causal body that can warrant such a founding. So that's really important. And, you know, I'm sure that many of us will be involved in these things in lives in the future, because the possibility of initiation is found within these schools. And a method of hierarchical access is found within these schools. Admit, you know, he says it here, he says it elsewhere too, a drastic entrance examination. Admission into them will not be easy of attainment. But each applicant for instruction will be, well, here it is, subjected to a drastic entrance examination. You will find each school will differ somewhat, not in fundamentals, but in the methods of application due to wise discrimination. The wise discrimination of the head of the school, the head being of the same nationality as the pupils, and having the faculties of the causal body fully developed. So, I don't know, does that mean that the head is not yet an initiate of the fourth degree, or that those faculties have been raised into a further heaven of the spiritual triad? Anyway, the faculties of the causal body will be fully developed, will apply the method to the immediate need. So this is perhaps a little anticipation of the monsoon, which is coming. A few drops will be anticipatory of the entire monsoon. He says something here, and we don't know yet whether he's going to say more later, and apparently he does say more later in the latter part of the book, beginning around 299 in this book, because so far we're not anywhere near that. So already, excuse me, the plans are laid. And many are the modifications that may come along, but they do seem to be in-person schools. And I'm sure that all kinds of technical advancements will make possible a type of communication right now that we can barely conceive, and yet is not in person. Telepathic, I suppose. Later, I may, he says, and he does, further expand the future of the meditation schools for your edification, your build-up, but I seek principally now to generalize. So sometimes I think I'm reading something that I read in a different place. So it's simply a generalization of some fuller discussion to come. but not easy to get into, and the karma has to be looked up, and a relative degree of freedom, karmic freedom, has to exist so that the work of the school can be followed. I guess I can see people basically being told, okay, go do this first and then come back, in order to dissipate the karma or balance it. So that was the kind of about the national approach and the coming of occult schools in the nations. And the national characteristics and racial characteristics and civilizational characteristics, cultural characteristics, you know, the many differences that come upon us because we are born at a particular time in a particular place. Now, what about the second group? You know, speaking of the groups that have to be considered regarding the man who is to be assigned meditation, what is this second group, which is of importance in the life of the pupil, is his family group, involving its special family heredity and characteristics. So such an investigation will be made for the prospective student. Every man who has reached a point in evolution where occult meditation is desirable and possible has entered some particular family from deliberate choice. What is the basis of that choice? Why that family? Sometimes I'm sure, without really knowing the karma, we have looked around and said, well, why this family? Why was I born into this family? What are the qualities which are being enhanced or which are being curtailed? But here are the reasons for the choice right here. Work off karma as rapidly as may be, because, you know, the old saying, it's a puzzlement, you know, but the enemies, your enemies are of your own household. Well, meaning that when people who have a lot to work off together are put in the same household, they do so more rapidly. And maybe then because of the physical vehicle provided by the family. Karma and physicality, it's a very Saturnian thing to be born into a particular family. Yeah. And sometimes people are apparently black sheep in their family. My son recently saw a huge herd of sheep. Is it a herd? You call it flock herd? 400 sheep come down to a lake to drink. And among them were 4 or 5 black sheep. Only a few among all the white sheep. So, even though in many respects you may wonder why were you born into this particular family, a lot of it is to work off a few specific things from the past and maybe to provide you with a physical vehicle which will be suitable for your work ahead. I think in the Bach family, there were just an extraordinary number of musicians. And, you know, maybe some musical heredity was involved there, or some sensitivity of the apparatus which enhanced musical expression. So we just, you know, and sometimes there are strange diseases which one has to confront, and the origin of these diseases is not known. So you will easily see, therefore, that the assigning of occult meditation to be carried out on the physical plane and in a physical vehicle, that in that assigning, it will be the concern of the teacher to know somewhat of the physical pedigree. That's almost like a seventh-ray term about refinement of body type, and the inherent characteristics of the pupil, both from the point of view of finding the line of least resistance and of demonstrating what must be overcome. It just seems like no stone is left unturned when it comes to the life of the student. Everything about that student is investigated. That's so different from the rather ignorant approach that we have now. The teacher doesn't know the student doesn't know the teacher. But then again, we are simply being educated in generalities at the present time. And this is a very deep kind of education which leads to spiritual advancement. Some of you who meditate are apt to be so engrossed straining after intuitional consciousness that you overlook the very necessary physical vehicles, the physical brain and the conformity of the head, as he's hinting at phrenology. Is this a hint at phrenology? So even the conformity of the head, I imagine the shape of the skull tells the teacher something, play a large part in the process, and must not be overlooked in the future as they are at present. It's so true. We have no means to study these things concerning the instrument which must use meditation. Well, this is necessarily so, he says. The overlooking, I suppose, for the dearth of trained teachers in the physical bodies is so insuperable at present. There is a great lack here. And we just don't have sufficient on the ground, visibly present teachers. But that, of course, over time will necessarily change. We have to keep a balanced point of view, and, you know, the old saying from Moria that even the smallest grain of sand can stop the largest wheel. So sometimes it's just the little physical thing that is stopping the spiritual progress. There was a disciple, I understand, who had what we would call now a kind of bulimic condition of binge and purge and binge and purge. And this particular habit with respect to diet was stopping her. Therefore, the family group is the second thing of moment that enters into consideration, and the matter is of more vital importance than perhaps you think. Okay. the national community, the state, the planetary center, the continent, et cetera. That's one thing. And now comes the question of the family group. Okay, so attention. Okay. The masters have said, well, you know, when looking at the behavior of some of their imitators, the masters have said, well, look, our breeding is better than that. We've been raised with good manners, and we do not succumb to the kind of crude response that X, Y, or Z, or group X, Y, or Z is demonstrating. So the masters have good breeding and good heredity. Now we're not talking about the master in the Maya Virupa, we're talking about one who has been raised in a certain way and has sustained the body through the fourth initiation and even through the fifth. The born body is still there, but the habit nature of the master is refined, let us just say. Now let's just see here. Not too much more. In the coming schools of meditation, and that's every such nation, that such a school can appear, in the coming schools of meditation, there will be records kept as to the pupil's forebears, his family history, the progress of his youth and life, and his medical history. The record will be minutely accurate, and much will be learned in this way. His life will be regulated, and the scientific purification of the physical body will be one of the first things attempted. Gosh, no stone unturned, it does seem. Even, you know, the medical records are part of the information which will help guide the teacher in assignment of meditation and in the general educational trajectory of the student. Incidentally, in speaking of these schools, I would like to urge that you picture not some isolated spot for their location. In the world, yet not of the world, is the ideal, and especially for the preliminary schools, and only in the advanced stages or just prior to taking initiation will the pupil be permitted to retire for periods of any length. It is the inner detachment that counts, and the ability to dissociate the self from the environment that matters, and not so much the physical plane isolation. Well, in general, you might say the advanced schools tend to be more isolated than preparatory schools. Sometimes you hear of the schools in the mountains and the advanced schools particularly, and you imagine the degree of isolation. And in later texts, DK seems to indicate this, but not for the preparatory schools, which have the same quality academically as any good university, but take on a much greater role in teaching spirituality. So it's going to be very demanding, and we can see why the students will have to be free for a while to really make the grade. Otherwise, they'll say, oh, you know, I had to take care of this, I had to take care of that, I couldn't do the work. So that kind of opportunity will not even occur. So let's just say, so far, national and racial, and how can we talk about this next one? The family group with its special family heredity and characteristics. So far, national and racial and family group. And now the third group that a man has to consider is the particular band of servers to which he may be affiliated. There are some various, very glamored bands, but I don't think that someone who is a full-hearted, throated devotee in such a glamorous group would be any real candidate for the kind of occult education that we are finding here. So the particular band of brothers, you know, particular band of servers to which he may be affiliated. Any man who is ready for occult meditation must have demonstrated first, for many lives, his intelligent willingness to serve and to work among the sons of men. Sounds like a lot of lives, doesn't it? And a lot of lives spent in worthy activity. Unselfish service is the bedrock of the life of the occultist, and danger lurks when it exists not, and occult meditation carries a menace, unless there is the service. So quite a bit of experience and in-life training must have gone on before the pupil can really knock at the door of a true occult school and expect that the door will be opened. Hence, the man must be an active worker in some part of the field of the world, and on the inner planes, he must likewise be playing his part. And then certain things will have to be considered by the teacher. So the man's activity along service lines, outer and inner, must be considered. The man's service activity along inner and outer lines must be considered. Certain things will then have to be considered by the teacher, Okay, and here are two of them anyway. The group work a man is doing and how best he may be qualified to serve better in that group. And the type of a man's work and its relationship in that work to his associates, a very important occult factor, will be carefully weighed before a meditation is assigned. And certain types of meditation, perhaps desired by the man himself, may be withheld on account of their being unsuited to the work in hand and because of their tendency to develop certain qualities which might handicap the server in his work. And those meditations will increase ability to serve and ever will, those meditations which will increase ability to serve will ever be the aim. The greater aim includes, after all, the lesser. So this is about service, active service even before knocking at the door, because some degree of success in that regard is desirable before a man is suitable. He must have proven his ability to work. So an active worker, and I'm just going to, that's who knocks, the one who has been serving and seeks additional occult strengthening to do still better work. And I'm not sure necessarily that there will be a taking off of time only to study and meditate. It may be that there is an expectation that some kind of service in the world will be continued. I think the next section later in the book will tell us about that, but service is the key, and the man must have proven some degree of unselfish service. And you kind of ask yourself, if these schools existed today, would I be able to prove unselfish service? Every aspect of the life is examined under the law of economy so that no time will be wasted. And the lives will be looked up. And the cult demonstrated for many lives his intelligent willingness to serve. All of that will be looked up by those who can be trusted to see things as they are from the perspective of the inner planes, and this probably involves causal consciousness, where the recent lives and lives anticipated can be quite clearly seen. So this is yet another type of group affiliation, national and racial and family group and outer groups in service will also be noted. It won't be to fulfill ambition or to get some kind of superior education for its own sake that there will be an admission into these schools. All right. And then only one more kind of point to deal with, point 6 out of 6 points. So the fourth group of affiliated individuals The fourth group that has a place in the calculations of the teacher is that to which a man belongs on the inner planes, the band of helpers to which he is assigned, or if he is a disciple, the group of souls of which he forms a part. Okay. So outer groups and inner groups. And basically right here, family group, good breeding, good heredity. Let's see, where am I here? Maybe it's going in the other direction, perhaps, I think. The nation and race. Here it is. Outer groups in service will also be noted. And coming up for discussion. Sorry. Inner groups also. And I'm just going to, you know, this is one of those reminder notes to myself and to everybody, because one has to summarize these matters in order to impress them upon the mind. All right. So their particular type of group work will be considered the capacity of the pupil to progress with his fellows will be fostered, and his ability to fill his appointed post will be increased. So now we have the sixth point out of six that have to be considered, or that has to be considered, when the master or some high initiate is offering meditation for the individual. I have but hinted in these last few communications at the many things that arise for consideration in the assignment of a meditation. And then, you know, he really wants us to get it, so he does repeat, and he says the value of repetition in this kind of educative work is profound. Many things that arise for consideration in this assignment. Obviously, we're nowhere near having the kind of insight and accuracy of internal sight that will allow us to do this. But we can certainly sense when qualities are missing and when corrections must be made. And in that respect, we can offer, let's say, some ideas, some words, some concepts to ponder. As when he said, if you want to love more, ponder on love. And I suppose if you want to know what will is, ponder on will. That sounds easy enough. But whether we would recognize whether the work had actually been done, that's another matter. You have three rays to consider. Egoic ray, personality ray, and the rays of the times. You have the point in evolution of the causal body and its interrelation on its own plane with its group, with the hierarchy, and with its reflection, the personality. So the many relations. The many relations of the causal body to other points of tension. You have the factor of karma, And with it, time, of course, the need of the time and of the man himself and his relationship with four different groups. And we have, so this is, we've just experienced here a brief summary. We've had a few of those summaries. A brief summary of what must be considered. The three rays, egoic ray, quite an interesting section on that. The personality ray, you know, what's missing. The point in evolution of the causal body, its specific gravity, its extent, its degree of refinement, and also, you know, the prevailing rays of the times, and the relations, interrelation of the causal body on its own plane with its group and maybe with other groups, with the hierarchy and with its reflection. So what can we say, looking horizontally, vertically, and downwards towards the personality. So every time he does this, you know, he does it in a little bit different order. Sometimes I just wish it could all just be, you know, the concrete mind in me wishes it could all be complete and sequential, cut and dried and the same. But he does, in expression, turn things around. You have the factor of karma, and we can say, built up over time, and the need of the time. You know, what is the general environment? The general environment in which the man is living, and the need of the man himself, and then the relationship between these different groups, national, racial, and family group, and outer groups, and inner groups. And, you know, this involves his service. So this involves not disrupting his group service. Well, how long does it take the master to do this? Does he simply look on and see the symbol and know what has to be done? Does it require meticulous study? Could, but then they have their expedited ways. I'm remembering, you know, this kind of psychometry. If a book is written by a student, the master doesn't have to read every word. A symbol will appear that shows the value of the book, its excellences, its deficiencies, etc. He gets it all at once. So these are the things, the many, many things that have to be considered when meditation is assigned. And when someone assigns you meditation, be circumspect and keep these factors in mind and realize what may be the limitations of the meditation assigned, because the Accuracy of knowledge is not yet sufficient by the one who does assign. That doesn't mean we can't learn from each other. Or that if someone tells you, you know, I think you could benefit by pondering on X, Y, or Z. Maybe something good can come out of that. But there's all kinds of opportunity for mistakes as well. And then if we're aware of what the Tibetan says here, we will not so easily fall victim to those mistakes. A summary. Goodness. SUMMARY, here follows. And if he tends to overwhelm us a bit with all the requirements, well, okay. That's how things are. And we might as well be initially overwhelmed and aware, at least, of what has to be considered, rather than naively enter and imagine that any meditation devised by someone who has a reputation or is esteemed as a teacher here or there, that any meditation will do. It may not do at all. Okay, friends, I think one more little paragraph. All this is possible and will someday be recognized, but the period of laying a foundation is not yet over, and for long will remain with you. Then as now, 100 years ago as now, the control of the mind is the present aim of meditation and must always be the elementary step, you know, the quieting of the modifications of the versatile psychic nature, the versatile mind, the versatile astral vehicle and its type of desirous phenomena. So foundational work is with us still. And it's so interesting that, you know, we are studying something that was written just a tiny bit more than 100 years ago. Okay. And so it's kind of interesting, isn't it, that we're taking it up at this point. The next one is letter 4, and that's going to be a separate program. And we've reached page 50, after all. And this has been program 12. And it looks like there we are, 41 to 50. And this is the 26th of July, 2020. And we've finished now letter 3. They are rather extensive letters, and DK doesn't write them all in one day. He comes back later to write. So, this is the end of program 12. And it's on the 26th of July. And we've gone from page 41 to page 50. And we'll get rid of page 38 there. And we'll start with program number 13 at some point here, and it'll be page 50. Well, we're already have done, a sixth of the book. not quite really. I think what's required is much more. Not just 300 pages, but $350. So we've done 1/7 of the book. We've done 12 programs. And 7 times 12 is 84. Will there be 84 approximately programs here? Depending, of course, on how long the programs are. This is another long one, but there seems to be a lot to say about the technicalities of the occultism that is presented. So at least for the moment, we're concluded, and there's going to be more broadcasting tonight, yes. And we're 1/7 of the way through the book. Now, I have written on the new esoteric schools a quite lengthy commentary, actually written out, where I've taken his words, sentences, paragraphs, step by step. But always there's a different quality when the speech comes into it, and maybe some greater spontaneity. And what one misses in writing, maybe one captures in video, and vice versa. So lots of love and many blessings from all of us on the communications team here of the Moria Federation, the University of the Seven Rays, the Seven Ray Institute, and the work of the Blue Rose Sisterhood, including many brothers, of course. We'll continue to build the chalice of Christ consciousness, anticipating that the beginning of the true Aquarian age in the year 2117. That's about 97 years from now. And we do anticipate that at that point we can begin to imagine when the Christ might return, though we should not overly speculate, because we cannot know the hierarchical perspective. So, all the best, and we'll see you before long. Bye-bye.